What a delicate flower. On the fourth night of the two Tonys incarnation in the Derek Gill-shaped chairs, Tony 1, Tony Martin, the main Tony, has taken ill. And Tony 2, Tony Wilson, yours truly, has to fill the breach. I started off as cabin boy, but I've climbed my way up to the main deck. And tonight we're going to be focusing on people who have done the same. When have you filled in? I want to hear about the great understudy stories. I want to hear about the time that you had to give the best man speech and fill the breach when it was yawning. Join us between... we're also going to have some slow food tonight, Damien Cullinan and also Cherie Morris. Stick with us between 7 and 10 tonight on the evenings. Filling in for Derek Gill.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
You have to use the radio equivalent of whiteout on the first half of that introduction. It's just Tony Wilson here in the evening's studio tonight. Unfortunately, Tony Martin, sometime between 12:03 when I farewelled him after a late night dinner last night and 8:30 this morning, his throat packed it in to the extent that he could barely speak. And now cortisone is being applied and he's basically being treated like a fluky half forward flanker who has moments of brilliance, but really, can he be relied on for a big, long week of radio? Unfortunately, it is just me, Tony Wilson, on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria tonight. I'd still love to hear from you. And in fact, the fact that we've lost Mr. Martin is going to inspire our talkback topic. I'm hoping we can hear the when have you had to step up to fill the breach stories. I want to hear from the understudies. I want to hear from the backstops. The number is 1-300-222-272 or text me on 1-9-774-774. Maybe you were called in at the last minute to take someone to a deb ball. Maybe you were a Brownlow date at the very last moment. Of course, the theatre world is filled with understudy stories. Maybe you were a co-pilot and something happened to a pilot and you were called on to land a plane, something as dramatic as that. The boss may have been away, you might have been running the important meeting with the client, or possibly it was the dinner for 150 where the chef just didn't turn up and the barbecue tongs were thrown your way. Again, I can go into the language of sport because I know that Tony probably is listening at home and we can move into a code that he can't understand at all. But in fact, back in 1981, is there a more famous understudy story than that of the great Peter Johnston, who on the occasion of Gary Sidebottom standing at the wrong spot in Geelong for the bus to pick him up, and so that bus came to VFL Park for a preliminary final against Collingwood without Gary Sidebottom, Peter Johnston was asked to fill the breach in Sidebottom's absence. And he had, of course, eaten half a chicken, a bucket of chips, along with a strawberry thick shake before the game, and yet was asked to step up and play on the biggest stage of all. And given that we are looking at another Geelong-Collingwood preliminary final this weekend, you may want to share your Sidebottom memories with me, or just talk about a moment in a sporting game where you were called on to fill the breach. That number, 1-300-222-772 or 1-9-774-774. And that number again, actually 1-300-222-774. It's not just going to be me in the chair tonight. I am going to have a few of Derek's regular guests. Cherie Morris is going to be coming in. She is an aquatic scientist and marine communicator, author of the Kama Sutra, one of the better puns going around in marine writing at the moment. And she's going to have a Port Phillip Bay theme tonight with Angeline Chu and Sean Dooley. Sean Dooley, twitcher and bird watcher and comedy writer, author of the recent release Cooking with Baz. He'll be in. We'll also have our Farmers Markets and Slow Food segment, Daniela Malika and Alan Snaith coming in for that one. And in the last hour, Damien Cullinan, a regular here on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. Damien will be steering me through the last hour, so it won't just be the solo Tony Wilson show. We're a Tony down, as I said, but please do give us a call, 1-300-222-774 with your Filling the Breach stories. But now, Martha Wainwright. Martha Wainwright there. When the day is short, we may be hearing from another Wainwright later in the show. Got her brother lined up for a bit of an appearance. We are talking understudies. It's Tony Wilson filling in for Derek Gill, and my fellow filler-inner, Tony Martin, he's come down with a throat infection, and so the only way you can experience Tony Martin today is to have a look at the Green Guide, where he's managed to plonk a full colour, and is that a slightly gelled hairstyle right there in the middle of the front page of the Green Guide? But tonight it's just going to be me. We're talking understudies. We're talking about the times that you may have stepped in to fill the breach. And please give us a call on 1-300-222-774 or text on 1-9-774-774 with your understudy stories. We've got Tony from Northcote. He may even be a Tony Martin. Are you there, Tony?
G'day, Tony.
Hello.
I don't think the Green Guide's the only way you can enjoy Tony Martin this evening, because my name's Tony Martin.
You're another Tony Martin. Has it been a rod for your back, or has it been sort of a badge of pride that you've been able to stride this planet as a Martin with the comedian Tony Martin making such a splash?
Your missing colleague is the bane of my existence.
Really? What have been some of the moments that have stood out for you?
Well, when I was a young child, everyone said, "Oh, can you sing?" Because there was a singer named Tony Martin in the 50s. I don't know if you've heard of him. He married the dancer Sid Charisse. And he's still singing in his 90s. But then in the last few years, it's been, "Oh, can you tell jokes?" And I've been on this earth longer than your missing colleague, so I reckon I was here first. And I've been looking for a chance to get my own back. So I'll stand in for him any day you like.
Well, it's interesting how your life can be thrown into disarray by the arrival of namesakes. And I know that the Tony Wilson that preceded me, the Tony Wilson record producer, the Factory Records founder, and one of the really key figures in Manchester music history, he's such a big Tony Wilson that I'll be coattailing him, I think, to the end. But you can have a big one just splash. The younger ones can really upset you. I know that there's a Tony Martin that's arrived on the cycling scene.
Yeah.
That he's going to pose all sorts of problems for you if he becomes the next Lance Armstrong.
Sure, and there's an actor that's not too bad. He's been an Australian actor that's been in a few movies.
Well, Tony, we are talking understudies tonight. If things get too desperate, I'll get your number and give you a call, and we'll just stick you in the studio to be the Tony Martin du jour. Very much appreciate your call. And others can call too on 1-300-222-774, understudy stories, and we've got Andrew from Wangaratta filled in during a cricket game.
Yeah, how you going?
How are you, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm very well. Yeah, this is going back years and years, Knapp Hill Cricket Club. This is back in Britain, by the way, because I'm an expat. So, a friend of mine phoned up, and they were obviously really, really desperate because I'm just not a cricketing man at all. But I was the line was thrown to me, and I came away from a rather sort of mad thrashy time at the wicket, with a total of 12 runs to myself, but I helped this particular friend out that asked me. I helped him out to get to his first 50 ever.
Magnificent. You were just holding up an end, sticking out a huge pad, Chris Tavare style?
I was sticking out the pad. I was, thrashing as wildly as I possibly could whilst trying to look as skillful as I possibly could, which is an awkward combination. Yes, it was a miracle that I got to 12, but I think it was even more of a miracle that I helped a good friend to his first 50.
And I hope he was grateful.
Always be a very proud moment for me, for him.
Fantastic. I think you should have raised your bat for your 12 as well, Andrew. thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
We're now going to go to Clint in Adelaide, and we're moving slightly off the filling in filling the breach theme for a moment, because there's a story that tickled my fancy in the Adelaide newspapers over the last couple of days, where a man by the name of Clinton Rule has set up a desk by the side of an Adelaide highway as a result of his recent unemployment. And he's spruiking his availability by turning up to work roadside. Clinton, are you there?
G'day, Tony.
Can you give us a summary of what's gone on in your life over the last couple of weeks?
Well, I resent you saying I put my desk on the side of the road. Make that the middle of the median strip with the cars, trucks rushing by each side. I lost my job 9 months ago as a mechanical engineer, and I thought, I'll just get another one. Not so lucky. After about 300 job applications and only one job interview, I thought, this is ridiculous. I've got to try something different here. So instead of job hunting, I thought, what about if I get out into the open and look wounded and wait for the prey to come closer and smack it with my CV?
So
that's the plan.
So you've got a desk there in the median strip. What's the name of the road? How big is it?
Well, I never choose the same road twice, you see. So it doesn't give the council enough time to process the paperwork and have me moved on.
So you are there every day. You're still going out?
Yes, I just pick a different road every day. And if the council gives me any trouble, I've got another plan. I'm just going to put my desk halfway between one council line and the other.
And have you got any sign that sort of spruiks your availability for engineering work there in the median strip?
Yeah, that's what I've done. I've filled up my desk with all sorts of retro items that I've borrowed from my employees over the years, and I'll give them back as soon as they give me a job. I've sprinkled them on my desk. They're really old, so it makes it look like I've been there for a long time, and I've got a sign out the front that says, mechanical engineer, I need a job, have own desk, with my telephone number.
Because, of course, the recruitment specialists do give the advice that you need to stand out in your applications, somehow be different from the crowd. And has it worked so far? Has anyone got in contact?
Well, when you act like an idiot, you also attract idiots. So that's one of the fallbacks of my cunning plan. So I've got people coming up from all walks of life to suggest all sorts of things to me. So I've had tip-offs to other companies. I've had get-rich-quick schemers turn up. I've had psychologists. I've had party animals turn up and say, mate, what are you doing? I've had fraudsters and pranksters. I've had the odd egg. I've had people asking me for a job. I've had someone thinking I was an art display. I've had small change thrown at me. I've had the police come by four times. I had a guy drive past and yell out, get off the road! I said, I'm not on the road. It's a median strip. Got you on a technicality.
and
amongst all that, there have been some genuine job prospects.
And so you have hope still. You'll be there tomorrow.
I'll be somewhere else tomorrow because the police made me move on about 3 o'clock today with the threat of a $93 fine.
Right.
Just step into my office. He said, you're in my office. Between that gutter and that gutter is my office.
Are you trying to get any mechanical engineering done while you're out there?
I am. I'm of the very, very easy type. I get a bit bored at this. So I staple things, and then I've got one of those little unpicker things. I unpick all the stapling I've done, and then I move on to hole punching. And I punch the holes in the paper until there's no paper left. And then with any time that's left over, I try and think about where I went wrong.
Well, Clinton, you are, I think, an example to young people getting out there, trying to think of interesting and innovative ways to stand out in the job market. And we wish you very well.
Thanks, mate. The young people, they love me. But unfortunately, the young people don't own or run large manufacturing firms.
Well, if you are a large manufacturer and you're looking for someone who is roadside as a manufacturing engineer, Clinton Rule is your man. He is in Adelaide, but I'm sure he's contactable through various means.
Thanks. Just call me Tony.
Thanks, Clinton.
Cheers, mate.
You're on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. Derek Gill, he's presenting the Conversation Hour this week. Tony Martin, he's presenting with a very sore throat and is therefore not in here. And myself, Tony Wilson, that leaves me. You can call on 1300 222 774 with your fill-in stories or text 19774 774. Paul from Sale has done that. Paul?
G'day, Tony. How you going?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, well. A few years ago, I was in London and sharing a house with a teacher And she said, I'll come along to the school production of Fiddler on the Roof tonight. And so I went along, and that day, the lead student, so the lead actor who was a student, had been suspended for doing something naughty. So they had to find someone the day of the opening night to get someone to fill in. So they got the only one that was keen was the PE teacher, believe it or not. And so they stood up there with a a document wallet thing and read the script while all the kids performed around them. And the PE teacher delivered it with a broken collarbone. So they had their arm in a sling, dressed as a Topol, whilst reading the lines that the naughty boy was meant to read. So it was very, very funny.
So he couldn't really get the good arm movement on the sunrise, sunset.
No, no, no. But, shuffling around like an absolute tradesman. So it was, and the other actors were sort of pointing and gesturing where he had to stand, and it was quite a good laugh.
Well, the theatre must be full of disasters.
Yeah.
And we'd certainly love to hear from actors who have had half an hour to learn a slab of 300 lines of Shakespeare and then had to front up. It may be that you had to give a speech. I know the impromptu speech can end in disaster, but certainly we appreciate your story, Paul. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
The number, 1-300-222-774. My own fill-in story that ended with some sort of disaster, not so much for me, but for my opponents, was my sister was in an under-14s mixed hockey team back in the mid-80s, and she was short for numbers, and the coach asked, was just looking for some fill-ins, and she got me and a friend who really had only ever played football before to play, and we had no idea about the sport, and didn't have any shin guards or anything. We just put newspaper down the fronts of our legs, and basically we went out there and unleashed carnage. I've subsequently seen that film Slapshot, with the Paul Newman film, where those what are the names of the brothers in that film? The three brothers with the thick glasses. We basically took to the field with that sort of finesse. And by half time, there was one of our opponents was crying and saying, "Get them off, get them off." So that was a fill-in moment in my own life. I think we've got one from Barry in Belgrave as well. You there, Barry?
G'day, Tony. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh, very well. My story goes back a bit. I was visiting a mate to watch him race his sidecar down at Phillip Island once, and he invited me to come out in practice because his passenger hadn't arrived to ride around in the chair for him. And I thought, well, that sounds like a bit of fun. I've always wanted to see how it works. I ride a solo bike myself, but I never thought I'd be mad enough to get in the chair. So I went out in practice, and then he says to me, look, he still hasn't turned up. Will you come out and qualify? So, well, okay, I suppose so. You going to go any faster? He said, no, I won't go any faster. So around we went, and I was scared, to say the least.
Yeah.
And then he fessed up just as they were calling him onto the dummy grid. He said, look, my passenger's lost his license. He's not coming.
So the whole thing was a plot in advance.
It was a ruse.
And how did you go? Did you qualify and then race in the main event?
We actually won the day.
Wow.
And that was back in the days of the Swan Theory down at Phillip Island, a long time ago, when the Phillip Island track had just been redone. And we went on to bigger and better things, and I spent about a year and a half racing with him.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah, it led to a lot of fun, yeah.
I had a similar experience in New Zealand in the Bay of Islands, where I just met an America's Cup yachtie on the ferry. And he invited me to go out as part of his crew in the yacht race that afternoon, and suddenly I was in a competitive yacht race in the Bay of Islands when I'm just a tourist in New Zealand.
Did you know what you're doing?
No. He just told us, stand over there, pull that rope. It was that sort of feel.
And yeah, it was a bit like that on the bike. He said, look, when I turn this way, you go over there. When I turn that way, you go over there.
Thanks a lot for your call, Barry.
Cheers, mate.
Number is 1-300-222-774. Colin, you there?
How you going?
Very well. How are you?
Pretty good. Look, many years ago, when I was about 25, I was sitting on South Melbourne Beach here in Victoria, watching the surf racing. Having a bit of a meet, the South Melbourne Surf Club.
Yeah.
Or Lifesaving Club, I should say, not Surf Club. And they come up to me and they said, look, we're one bloke short. You're about the same right age. Would you like to just fill in?
Yeah.
And I found myself in this surf race. and I was hopeless. I'd hardly ever swum in the sea.
Yeah.
And I was so slow on the way back, in fact, I half drowned, they had to start the next race while I was still swimming. And when I got to the beach, they were so appreciative of me doing it, they all stood up and honoured me with that line where they all stand and you walk through it.
Wow, a guard of honour.
And I didn't walk through, mate. I staggered through. I was half drowned.
Yeah.
I staggered up the beach, and one of the young ladies who was in the surf club came up to me with a drink and said, look, you've earned this, and I was absolutely... I didn't think I'd make it back to the beach in the finish. It was only a short race, perhaps 200 metres out and around a buoy and back, but for me it was like about 5 miles. And, I'll never forget stumbling through that line of honour. It was surreal. It's like something out of a movie.
Sounds like you were a hero. Sounds very cool and out of gold,
Colin. 20 seconds, yeah, but I held the next race up for so long, I don't know. I think they just had us started in frustration in the finish.
Thanks a lot for your call, Colin.
Good on you, mate.
You can SMS as well on 1974774, and we have one here. I had to deliver a speech in Mandarin Chinese to a visiting delegation. It was a great experience, and I'm rather glad that no one volunteered but me. And we've also got Gail from Oakley. You there, Gail?
Yes, I am, Tony. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Good, thanks. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, I'm a long-time listener, first-time presenter.
Oh, well, we're both novices.
Yeah.
Tony, my fill-in story is this. I got a phone call in August 2004 from a friend of mine who worked in a workplace, and one of the girls who was working there was going into hospital to have her tonsils out, and I was offered the job for 10 days, and I've just handed my notice in on Monday.
And how did it turn out?
It's been a fabulous experience working there. I've worked with a really good bunch of people, and I've just had a ball. But I'm planning a big move up north, so I've handed in my notice, and I'm taking care of business.
Well, fantastic, Gail. Good luck with it.
Thank you, Tony.
Now, the phone number here is 1300 222 774. We've got news headlines coming up shortly. But first, we've got Count Basie with a song, one of the real roaring hits going up the charts at the moment, I believe, possibly had its zenith in the early 40s. It is Did You See Jackie Robinson? Count Basie, Did You See Jackie Robinson? A song I discovered through the magnificent series Baseball, which showed on the ABC a few years back, a documentary by the same guy who did the War documentary of last year, and Baseball, I think there's a 17-hour version you can buy if you can track it down, probably through the internet, but it's certainly worth a watch. One of the best documentary series. More of your calls shortly, but now it's time for news headlines with Jim Graham. Jim?
Thank you, Tony. By the way, if you're doing requests, I wouldn't mind something from Mae West.
Magnificent. We'll look into it, Jim.
Thank you. Indonesian police have confirmed the country's most wanted terrorist, Nuruddin Muhammad Top, is dead. The national police chief says Top was killed by security forces in Java during a raid this morning. He says fingerprint and hair samples taken from the body match up. There's been a large explosion in the Afghan capital, Kabul, shaking buildings and sending a thick plume of black smoke into the air. An AFP reporter says at least 3 people have been killed. The blast occurred a short distance from a diplomatic area housing several foreign missions, including the US and British embassies. Hundreds of call centre workers in Melbourne are losing their jobs with the decision by telecommunications company Vodafone not to renew its contract with a service provider. Vodafone will move the 450 jobs to Tasmania and India. And a man has died in a car accident at Darawit Wim, north of Melbourne. The car ran down an embankment on Romsey Road. We'll have more news at 8 o'clock.
Four to win then. Here comes Sidebottom up to the wickety bowls again. Sue Johnson, who goes over the top, and that'll do it. Will it be four or six to win the match? It's a six. It's a huge hit.
One Day Internationals.
And that seals yet another victory for Australia. They've beaten England by four wickets in this series.
The Aussies are on a roll and looking to make it a clean sweep.
Cricket on the radio.
Make sure you join Jim Maxwell with the Grandstand commentary team tonight from 11 on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Grandstand Digital Radio.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
If only. It's just Tony Wilson here with you on this Thursday evening at 25 minutes to 8. Tony Martin, he has cortisone being applied to a very sore throat and unfortunately couldn't be here this evening. But I am here and we're talking fill-ins. Very much the topic at front of mind for me. But I'm hoping to get your stories as well of the time you may have understudied or you may have stepped up to the plate when your family or your business or even your country needed you. And the number to call is on 1-300-222-774 or to SMS on 1-9-774-774. And Richard has his fill-in story from Wattle Glen.
Yeah, hi Tony.
How are you, Richard?
Yeah, very good, very good. Now, we've just celebrated our 12-year wedding anniversary and we had friends over last night and we're reminiscing about how exciting it was when the minister didn't turn up. And our story went that I asked one of my friends to fill in for us. I gave him an order of service and told him to go for it. So he got through, you know, got right through to the sermon and the talky bit, and he gave a sermon for us and, you know, I remember it beautifully. And just as he finished his sermon, the real minister, you know, walked in and did the walk of shame right to the very front and said, "I'm so, so sorry."
So what's the legalities of that? Obviously, they only need to do the kind of witnessing of the document or saying one sentence, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. So it seemed like for the duration of our wedding that we were going to get married in the eyes of God, but not in the eyes of the law.
Yep.
But fortunately, that bit hadn't come yet, so the whole service was done except for the paperwork. The minister walked in right at the right time and did the paperwork for us, but my friend was the fill-in for 90% of the wedding, and we've always remembered him for it and thanked him.
That's a lovely story, Richard. Thank you for calling it through.
No problems.
John in Mitcham. How are you, John? You've got a response to an earlier caller, have you?
Oh, yes, Tony. How are you?
I'm very well.
Look, I happened to be on the beach that day when Cole came staggering out of the water.
You really? How did he look? Was it a touch and go there for a while?
I was really very interested when he phoned up, and I thought, I remember this. And it's amazing how contextualisation can skew a person's perception. Because when you think about it, the second race started as Cole was basically swallowed up in the backwash of the first race.
Yeah.
So when he came staggering out of the surf to a standing ovation, it wasn't because of his struggle. It was because we thought he'd won the race.
So
and that's
really,
what happened.
So really people thought he was so late that people thought he was part of the second race.
We thought he'd won the second race.
That is magnificent.
So that's a bit of news for Cole. We were happened to be on the beach that day.
Well,
and we fell into the trap as well. So thank you, Cole, for clearing that up.
That's great, John. Thank
right you.
You
are. Right you are, sir.
No worries. Dave from Frankston, are you there?
Yeah, how are you going? Not too bad?
Good.
Well, I had to step to the plate because many, many years ago, Mum had a stroke. At the same time, Dad was getting the early stages of Alzheimer's. So they were either going to put Mum and Dad into a nursing home or I become the full-time carer.
Wow.
I became a full-time carer over a period of 12 years.
Incredible.
Yeah, so that's when you have to say, you know, step up to the plate. And the doctor that was looking after Mum said, it's good that you're taking over, but I'll give you 2 weeks and you'll give up. But I didn't. So I was thrown in the deep end there. But I did it because they were me Mum and Dad, you know what I mean?
And had you had any sort of, I guess, preparation for that sort of role? Or had your sort of...
I was an only child and I had no experience before that.
Oh, that's incredible, Dave, and I'm sure you did as well as anyone could do in those sorts of situations. It must be very difficult.
Yeah, and also, too, you ask questions, and your district nurses and doctors, you ask questions, and anything you learn, you know, you write it down in a bit of paper, so it's always there to double-check everything. But I'm glad I did it, and it was an easy job sometimes.
Excellent, Dave. Well, thank you for calling and giving us your fill-in story. If you've got one, 1-300-222-774. The two Tonys supposedly filling in for Derek Gill, well, we're a Tony short, and so I've straddled the desk and come across this side and I'm doing the job of Tony Martin tonight. And get well, Tony. A great article today on the front page of the Green Guide. But unfortunately, you can only have written word Tony tonight rather than his terrific radio style. So get well, Tone. Hopefully we'll see you on Monday night. You're on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. That talkback number again, 1-300-222-774. I'd love to hear from you or text on 19774774. Let's go to a track. Bruce Springsteen, Girls in the Summer Clothes. Good on you, boss. Or are you the boss? Certainly one of the two. Girls in the Summer Clothes, that's off his most recent album, Magic. I'd say it's of 18 months ago now, possibly even 2 years. It's Tony Wilson here on 774 ABC Evenings. I'm filling in for Derek Gill, and Tony Martin is meant to be filling in with me. He's just laid out, barely breathing by the sound of things. No, not that bad. It is all throat related, but it's amazing how important a throat is if you do radio, and hopefully he'll cortisone his way back into action by Monday. But in football terms, it's just indefinite is what they would have put in the injury list for Tony Martin. Derek Gill, not injured. He's on the Conversation Hour, and you can catch him between 11 and 12 this week doing a different time slot, which is why we're here. But we do have one of Derek's regular guests, Cherie Maris. She's been a co-host regularly over the last year. I'm sure listeners to Derek's show know you well, Cherie.
How you going?
Aquatic scientist and marine communicator.
Yes, princess, whatever title you want to use, I'm happy to take it.
Now, we've been talking about fill-in stories because I had that sort of crisis moment when told I'd be on this side of the desk tonight.
And you're doing a cracking job.
And we've got one. Jane from Richmond has a fill-in story there. Hello, Jane.
Hello.
You've got a story of stepping up to the plate?
Yeah, it was quite a while ago, when the new seekers were all the rage.
The
if you can remember back that far.
When were the new seekers? Because the seekers were mid-60s, were they? So were the new seekers 70s or 80s?
70s.
Right.
And Judith Durham, I think, had left the group. And there was a blonde woman that fronted it. I don't even know her name. I was in Queenstown in New Zealand and caught a ride down the street with someone who I was staying with and buying a toothbrush,
yeah,
a lot earlier than I'm usually out and about, and I got approached in the street and asked if I, you know, wanted to do a job for 2 weeks.
Right.
And the seekers had overcommitted themselves, or the program was. They had to be in Christchurch to rehearse for a performance, but they were also doing an advertising promo. So I was it.
So you became what you had to act as a new seeker?
As a woman, yes, and doing all these advertising promos around the South Island of New Zealand.
So did you have to sing?
I just had a ball and stayed in all these five-star places, which no way I could afford or would have done, and got to do all these adventures like, visiting places that I never would have gone to, and all this tourist stuff and adventure stuff, and it was fabulous. And I got paid.
And so did you look anything like the Judith Durham replacement?
Well, not Judith Durham.
The one that was the new Seeker version of Judith Durham.
Because I came back to Melbourne shortly after, and I remember in Chapel Street and walking into shops and people whispering and coming up and asking for an autograph.
And was there any, like, it's obviously quite a strange proposition when that person came up to you in the street. Was there a moment of, well, I'm not going with this person?
New line.
candid camera. Now, could you sing? Did you have to sing or were you miming?
No, I just had to pose.
And did you have a tambourine and, you know, all that kind of stuff?
No, I just had to be in the shot, you know, as one of the Seekers.
And have you got any of those photos still somewhere tucked away in an album?
I have a brochure somewhere, the final brochure, but I think that's in the bowels of my, storage somewhere.
Wow, well, that is a 30-year classic story for you that you've dined out on many, many times, and it's a great pleasure to hear it here on 774 Melbourne.
I've got one of those faces. I often get mistaken for someone else, and I've got some good friends who thought I was someone else.
Well, Jane from Richmond, rock and rolling, riding your way through the South Island. That is fantastic. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
We have an SMSer. I went to give money to a Chinese bear charity on Bourke Street and I ended up getting dressed up as their bear. That's Joe from Hopper's Crossing. So basically...
how does that happen?
You go from donor to mascot within about a few minutes of conversing, perhaps, Joe. I'm not sure. I'm colder when I speak to the wilderness koala, I must say. I never really feel like getting in the suit with them.
No, I'll give them a big hug, maybe a few coins.
Yeah.
But that's probably as much as I'm prepared to give, not get into the suit. Could you imagine how stinky it would be, especially if someone else was in there beforehand?
Terrible.
Not pleasant.
Shane from Mansfield, about 10 years ago, a mate asked me to fill in for him at tennis. We didn't get beaten for the next 4 years.
What a superstar.
So I wonder if the mate was allowed back in the team or whether Shane
dumped.
From Mansfield just permanently took his position. Sheree, have you got a story filling in?
I have got a story. When I was younger, probably around 11 or 12, I was a bit of a tomboy. And so I was often, you know, on my skateboard and riding around on my BMX. And my cousin's football team needed someone to fill in. And I thought, I'll give it a crack. So I filled in for the boys' football team. And I ended up playing probably for the rest of the season and I got a trophy and it was just fabulous. Mind you, I looked like a boy at that stage because, you know, no boobs, kind of, you know, late developing, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I played footy. I was a girl who played footy.
What
lovely
was your
mullet.
Position?
I have no idea. I just
kind of ran around
like an absolute lunatic.
And were you like a crowd favourite? Did they sort of get behind you because you were the girl on the team?
I don't know.
I just can't remember.
Ran around like an absolute lunatic. And I remember the boys kind of, you know, a bit scared about tackling and all that kind of stuff, where I was just tomboy kind of in there trying to get the ball. So, that was a unique experience. So I've got my photo up at Somerville Football Club.
And had you really learnt the skills or was it pretty much learn on the job?
Yeah, I was an absolute hack. But I had a bucket of enthusiasm and I think that's what counts. So I think my mum's actually still got the first kick that I had. They actually mounted the football for me.
Well, certainly it's a bit similar to my filling in the female hockey team where I wreaked havoc for all the wrong reasons. It sounds like you were well accepted. I was not well accepted and I was asked to never play again.
Oh, really?
Too many elbows, too many shoulders when I played under 14 mixed hockey.
Oh.
Because my background had been the contact sport. You're on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. The number 1300 222 774 or text on 1977474. Sheree Maris is sitting in with us up until the news, and then after the news, we're going to be talking Port Phillip Bay with a couple of Sheree's guests.
Yes.
Who have we got coming in, Sheree?
We've got Anne Chu, who's a marine planner from Parks Victoria, and we've got Sean Dooley, who is a fine example of multitasking. He's a comedian, writer, and he's a bit of a twitcher, so he's a bird watcher. So I'm keen to find out all about the different birds in Port Phillip Bay. I've got lots of questions.
And in fact, I've heard Sean Dooley on a community radio station where he does a magnificently named segment called Squawk Back, where you can ring in with Squawk your back. Bird-related questions.
That's gold.
It is. It's an excellent title for a show. We've got some Italian cafe music to ease us into the rest of your calls. I'd love to hear some more understudy or stand-in stories. 1-300-222-774 is the number. You're on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. There's only one Tony here. Where have you gone, other Tony? How we miss you. This is Karina.
Lascia casa la mamma. Carina, diventi tutti i giorni più carina.
Nicola Aragliano, give yourself a clap. Italians out there in the audience who heard me mangle that pronunciation, you're welcome to boo. The track name, Karina. The album, Italian Cafe, it's one of those Putumayo selections, and it's an excellent background music listen, and I highly recommend it. You're on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. I'm talking to Cherie Maris. She's joined us. She's going to be with us after the news as well. We're going to be talking Port Phillip Bay, Cherie.
I know. Favourite topic, close to my heart. Anything watery and I'm in.
Are you a diver?
Yes, I'm a little water baby. That's it. The only time that I can relax and chill out and not think about anything is when I'm diving. So that's kind of my form of meditation.
I'm probably one of those pretend divers that you think, how could you do this? I went and got my dive certificate when I was up
in the tropics.
In the tropics. And I went and got my dive certificate. And have not dived once since.
Oh, you are so missing out.
I am, I know. I loved it when I did the certificate and got the... Yeah, it was fantastic.
And here in Port Phillip Bay, it's so incredibly colourful and diverse, so I'll have to drag you out, I think.
Well, what is your favourite bit of Port Phillip Bay? That is one of the questions we're going to be asking for listeners as well. Do you have a special fishing spot, somewhere you like to scramble on the rocks, sit on the sand? Do you dive or snorkel? We want your Port Phillip Bay anecdotes.
Yes,
what about you,
Cherie?
Have you got a favourite spot or you don't want to give it away?
I have. I've got a new favourite spot, which is Blair Gary Yacht Squadron. And it is just phenomenal. The Yacht Squadron is kind of like a marina. It's got these overhangs with, you know, amazing walls that are just covered in a kaleidoscope of colours and lots of nudibranchs, which are kind of like little sea slugs. And they come in the most incredible colours and so bright. And there's so many different types there. On every pylon, you'll see a new species. So that's what I'm loving at the moment.
And how cold is it right now? Do you need to have, I don't even know what the ratings of wetsuits are. Do they need to be effective? Parker and skivvy underneath.
Yeah, dry suit. Look, it depends. I'm a bit of a sooky lala. I get a bit cold, so I'm still got my hood on. But my suit's only 3 mil, so it's not that thick. I've just got to toughen up, really.
And is it deep, Port Phillip Bay, or is it kind of a shallow dive?
Yeah, it can be. Most of the dives are shallow. If you go in the heads, it can be fairly deep. But, yeah, most of it's shallow diving, which is great, and it makes it accessible for most people. So if you want to snorkel, even if you put on a pair of swimming goggles, you can go and see some of the colour. It's amazing.
Well, please share your Port Phillip Bay experiences with us and our guests. The number is 1-300-222-774 and 1-9-774-774. Cherie Maris will be with us after the news as well, as will Sean Dooley and Angeline too. So stick around on ABC Evenings.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
He left me alone. He left me alone to do it alone. Tony Martin, not here tonight. Tony Wilson, filling in for Derek Gill on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria Evenings. We have had Cherie Maris in with us over the last half hour, and we're now joined by Angeline Chu. Now, Angeline is a marine planner with Parks Victoria. She's a scientist and recreational diver. They've already been comparing favourite spots, Cherie and Angeline. They've been talking a language I barely understand, and they're going to now make it all intelligible. How is our bay, Angeline? Is it in good nick?
It's in pretty good nick. It's pretty cool at the moment. To be about 13 degrees in the water.
That is cool.
It is cool.
I went diving with dolphins and whales in Kaikoura. Down in New Zealand, and it was 8 degrees.
Ooh, that is chilly.
There were 1,400 dolphins in the pod, and they were all diving and splashing around. So you can imagine maybe that's kind of the most idyllic natural one you'll ever be around. Yet it was so cold that
How cold?
I think you'd go in, you'd dive with the dolphins, you'd last about a minute and a half, and then you'd go out again and then have another go.
That'd be just massive, seeing so many dolphins at once.
There were so many of them that I just snapped my camera and I had about 15 photos of dolphins in perfect arcing jumping position.
That kind of charismatic shot. But it's so nice to have another water baby on the show. So welcome. Now, what's your favourite dive spot in the bay?
Well, my favourite dive spot would be Pope's Eye. And I know that's a beginner site for a lot of divers, but it's and probably most divers would take their first dive there. And it's a lovely place to go to. It's been protected since about 1974 as a marine reserve and now a marine national park. And you're guaranteed to see some wonderful fish there.
So it's kind of like a horseshoe shape, isn't it? It's made out of basalt.
Basalt rocks that were put down. It was going to be the foundations of a fort, which was never built.
Lucky for us.
Yes, indeed. But I always can see some fabulous fish there, and it covers lots of different skill levels. So if you're not a very confident snorkeler, you can stay inside the annulus, and if you are, you can go outside. And
So that's Pope's Eye. Whereabouts is that? How do you get there?
Pope's Eye is just off Queenscliff, and you'd probably travel there by boat, a little short trip. You can take your recreational vessel or a tour boat out there.
Now, Angeline, we're joined by callers who are fellow water babies like you two. Heather from Anglesey is one of those. Heather, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Heather.
Hi. Thank you. I am definitely a water baby, and I just want to say Pope's Eye is also a really favourite spot to go snorkelling for me, and there are some wonderful trips that you can do as half-day trips from either one side of the bay or the other. We often go from Queenscliff, and I've been taking my nieces and nephews on trips since they were 6 and 7 years old. And Pope's Eye is a beautiful place to dive because you've got the Australasian gannets colony there, and nearby there's the place where the seals are.
Yeah.
And there's just so much to see out there, and it's easy, as you say, it's really accessible, and a safe dive to do or a safe snorkel to do. But I have to say, Cherie, that I totally agree with you about diving in cold water. I learned to dive in Portsea in June. That was many, many years ago. And that was great to start off with the cold water, because then when you go into the warm water, it's really wonderful. But it's pretty hard to go back into cold water.
Yeah, it is. But in terms of becoming a better diver, I think they recommend that you actually start in cooler waters, because you learn to be a better diver because you've got to regulate your buoyancy and you've got your wetsuit. Whereas if you go up north into the tropics, you haven't got to worry about that as much, because, you know, sometimes you're not even wearing a wetsuit. So it's a good training ground down here in the north.
I absolutely agree with you on that. I used to work in the Maldives, and yes, I know. And
amazing.
It was a beautiful place to dive, but what I found really interesting was people who came to the Maldives to learn how to dive have a very false sense of security, because it's kind of so easy.
It is, and you have people putting on your tanks. I went to the Maldives and I just felt like an absolute princess. You just stand there and people put your tank on for you and they clean your mask, and it's just so easy. And then you come down here and you don't have to do it. You have to do it all yourself. You have to lug your tank yourself. But, you know, I think that makes us better divers.
I actually agree with you. I agree. And I would have to say, if people are thinking of learning to dive, as you did, Tony, on a holiday.
Yeah, it was a Cape Tribulation.
How beautiful.
It was beautiful, where the Daintree meets the Barrier Reef.
what we found in the Maldives, that often would people would come there and they would spend their holiday actually learning how to dive. And I used to always say to people that I knew, if you've got the opportunity, learn to dive in a place like the bay before you go on your holiday, because then you've got, you know, you've got your study and your lessons and all that behind you. When you go on your holiday, you can actually enjoy that diving destination rather than spending your whole time
in pools.
Yeah, actually learning.
Yeah, that's a good tip, actually, because we did spend probably 2 days of our six in swimming pools learning how to use the apparatus or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much, Heather, for your contribution. The number 1-300-222-774. If you want to share a bay story with us, we've got Angeline Chu here. She's a marine planner with Parks Victoria, and our regular panelist Cherie Maris, who comes in every couple of weeks with Derek.
Yay!
So, talk, girls.
Well, I want to know, have you got, for me, I used to love dolphins when I was a little girl, so I had these romantic notions of travelling around the world. And then when I was about 10, I stumbled across this stunning creature, a nudibranch, which totally transformed my life. And for those listeners, if you imagine a land slug that you find in your garden, paint it the brightest yellow that you can imagine, and then throw bright blue blotches of paint all over it, and then put a blue frilly skirt on its back. Well, that's what I found. And that turned me into a little water baby, and I wanted to run out and tell the whole world about it. Did you have that kind of experience, or have you got like a pin-up creature which just, you know, inspires you?
Well, I did have a similar experience getting involved in marine science. I actually have a former career of being a florist beforehand for about 10 years. And I did have experience where we went out into a boat and we went through the heads, and I was actually with my family and they were fishing, but we're out in the ocean. It was a fabulous day, and I just thought it was the most wonderful place I've ever been, and decided at that point in time that I wanted to be involved in the marine environment all the time. But my favourite creature, I think, has got to be something like a dumpling squid or a sand octopus. I think they're very adorable little creatures. You've got to snorkel at night to see them.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, a place that you probably know is Raipia, which is a terrific place, the octopus's garden, to go and see octopus at night.
They're great. And I love octopus because they're like chameleons of the sea, so they can change their texture and they can change, you know, colour, and they're jet powered, and they're just so fantastic and so incredibly smart.
Outrageously smart. There's a lot of good documentaries around that show you how clever they are, and fascinating to watch.
Like, what do they do that's clever? Give us one clever octopus skill.
I've heard and seen documentaries where they can open a jar that's got a shrimp inside to get the shrimp out to eat it, and those sort of, I know there was an aquarium.
New Zealand.
Yeah, where they had octopus and sharks together, and the sharks kept getting knocked off at night and they couldn't work out what was going on. So they put a camera into the tank and watched, and the octopus were eating the sharks.
How?
Because they're ambush predators. They'd wait for the shark to come close enough, grab it, and they've got little beaks, which they, a bit like parrots, and they bite into the prey and inject a sort of a venom.
Neurotoxin.
A neurotoxin that paralyzes them, and then slowly eat them.
Yeah, and it's they cross their eight arms and, you know, nothing to see here. I don't know what you're talking about. What sharks?
Surely.
There was no sharks.
They cross six of them, but use one arm to wrap gently with your fingers on the pier.
But they are, and they're so curious. I just think they're fabulous. And dumpling squid are, you know, probably about the size of your thumbnail. And they just kind of jet about, and they've got luminescent kind of bacteria that they harness, which gives them these incredible iridescent colours. They're just, for anyone who has not snorkelled in Port Phillip Bay, you know, once the weather starts getting warm, even just use swimming goggles and go to your local beach and have a look, because you'll be just blown away. And piers are a great place to start, because the pylons become, you know, habitats for a range of animals, and they're just painted in a kaleidoscope of colours.
Well, I think Rob from Traralgon is a marine man, and his
Rob.
Particular love may be shipwrecks. Are you there, Rob?
Yeah, g'day, Tony. How you going?
Good.
Yeah, I, like Angeline, learned to dive in about June, about 22 years ago, and certainly have a real passion for the marine environment, and it's pretty spectacular, particularly the shipwrecks out there.
Have you got a favourite shipwreck?
Well, we were lucky enough a couple of years ago to dive one called the City of Launceston. It's right out in the middle of the bay. Have you heard of that one, Cherie?
No, I haven't. But having said that, I'm not a great wreck fan. Most boys that I know love wrecks. It must be a boy thing. You know, girls usually love pretty things like nudibranchs and charismatic stuff. And the boys tend to love the wrecks. But no, I haven't heard about it. What about you, Angeline?
I've heard of the Launceston. That's a complete wreck, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Very much protected. But the good thing about that, Cherie, is that because the wrecks are decomposing and oxygenation from the middle, there is a huge variety of fish life that's attracted to it, from your larger, you know, bigger fish life and the leather jackets and that. And the wreck of the Hurricane just off there is pretty spectacular.
Yeah, that's gorgeous.
Yeah, have you done that one?
Yeah, I have. It's got lots of sponges and hydroids and, you know, really cool creatures. So I have done that one. I can put my hand up and say I have.
Are there any treasure chests? That's what I want to know, like half open but with gold coins kind of spilling out.
We're not going to tell you about it, are we?
They're absolutely magnificent. It's like a moment captured in time underneath the water, and those that have been well preserved have got lots of interesting photographic material, but also the surrounding life with the scallops, etc. But what I really want to mention to you guys is there's going to be a new shipwreck that's going to be put down very soon. Albeit it's just outside Port Phillip Heads, called the Canberra. And we're waiting, even those that are in Latrobe Valley, are waiting for that government to have the weather window and allow that military ship to be sunk very shortly, imminently, within days, we hope.
Wow. That's right. Stay tuned.
It's always the weather that gets in the way, Rob.
Yes, I know. But the good thing about the shipwrecks too is once they go down, over time, they become encrusted with your macroscopic, microscopic life, and then, of course, the bigger fish come in there. Plus, it's great photographic, great for new divers and students. Just put them in the appropriate wetsuit for the weather temperature and that. And absolutely, I agree with you, Port Phillip Bay, and certainly Western Port, and even a bit further in my area, off Inverloch and the Bunurong Marine National Park are outstanding marine locations.
Definitely. Wilson's Prom, if you keep going along, is absolutely stunning.
Yes. And we'll be diving on Saturday and hopefully diving around the back of Phillip Island off a place called the Pinnacles on Sunday.
Oh, good luck. I hope the weather holds up for you.
Look, you're doing a great job, and we'll catch up with you sometimes, perhaps on the coast of Port Phillip Bay or come a little bit further afield into Gippsland. It's quite spectacular for the snorkelers and the divers.
Well, Rob from Traralgon, just great to hear someone barracking for ships to be hitting that ocean floor, as you do. Stuart from Croydon is also calling through with a favourite dive spot. Stuart?
Yeah, g'day, how are you?
Good.
Portsea Hole is one I'd like to add to the list.
Yeah.
Really nice, very short little boat trip too, for those that don't like boats. From Portsea Pier.
Yep.
A nice little drop off, not particularly, you know, I think it's about 18 metres, and then it drops off.
Yep, not too
and
deep.
And really very pretty.
Yeah, have you been diving there at night?
No, never done a night dive there. Done a lot of night diving, but not at that spot.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, no, look, really enjoyed it. It's the only place I've actually sort of seen a spider crab in the bay. And yeah, sort of. That was the only time that the camera didn't work as well as it should have. But also, I suppose the other thing you're talking about, you know, the nudibranch, and of course, you know, some lovely little nudibranch that you find in the bay. But the other thing that I find absolutely gorgeous is the blue-ringed octopus. And I found at Mornington Pier, not the prettiest of dives, but if you're after seahorse, that's a great spot to find them. And I found quite a few of the octopus over time.
Yeah, the blue rings are amazing. Once again, they're probably about, their head's probably about the size of your thumbnail. And when they're camouflaged, you can't actually see them. I remember I was rock pooling at Shoreham Beach, and I turned over a rock and I just thought, oh, there's just a few sponges there, and I was about to turn it back over. And I had to look again, but it was actually a blue ring octopus. And then it kind of started getting a bit cranky pants because it wanted to be in the dark, and then it started changing colour, and then its blue rings started pulsating.
Wow.
And that's a warning, is just to say, you know, I'm really not that happy.
Believe me.
They're iridescent. They're just so stunning. Have you seen them when you've been diving, blue ring octopus?
Haven't seen one when I've been diving or upset, but I believe they are very prevalent around Port Phillip.
Yeah.
Even up in the northern part.
Well, I'm sure I'll be the one who stumbles across one, probably stepping on it at Mount Martha Front Beach.
Well,
that would be my luck.
So.
We're going to have a track. Sean Dooley is here now. He's going to talk Port Phillip birds with us in a moment. Hopefully, Cherie and Angeline will stick around for us. This is Arcade Fire with Ocean of Noise. Give us a call, 1300 222 774. That's Arcade Fire with the appropriately titled Ocean of Noise. We've been talking oceans here on ABC Evening, 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. And we've been talking them with Cherie Maris and Angeline Chu. But Sean Dooley has now rolled into the studio. He's going to throw a slightly birdie flavour over things. But while we're still on the fishes, hello, Sean.
Good evening. Thanks. Thanks for allowing me in the studio.
Oh, it's a great pleasure.
I thought I saw an owl on the way and got distracted.
Really?
It was just, I'm having visions.
Too many shardies.
And but we will just finish off underwater. We've had an SMSer saying that favourite spot for Frank is the 26-metre sub.
Oh,
I think
yes.
You can't go past leafy water dragons. And someone else has said diving in the Murray is good with the warm water.
And yeah, I don't know if you'd see a lot.
Not good visibility there.
And the yabbies scare you when they come out of nowhere.
Yeah, and they can be massive. But I'm relishing having another water baby here, so thanks for coming along. But before we get to you, Sean, we'll share the love in a minute. I just want to wrap this up. Angeline, there's a new program that's been put in place which people can actually get more involved in monitoring our marine environment. Can you just quickly take us through that before we get on to twitching?
Of course. Sea Search and Reef Watch, in conjunction with People and Parks Foundation and Parks Victoria, have developed a marine monitoring kit for people to take out. It's a subtitle kit, and it's basically a set of cards which have species for southern Victoria that you can take this diving with you and identify species while you're diving.
So the average punter, I don't have to be a scientist, I can just be
Absolutely
someone not. Who's nuts about the marine environment and wanting to learn more and contribute to management, research.
Yep, and general knowledge. And we could give this to Tony tomorrow.
Absolutely.
And
a
good wetsuit.
Yeah, and then we'll test you.
I'm also a solicitor, but in either of those things, it would be incredibly dangerous for me just to take it up again. So I think I should do at least another stint in the pool with my gear, I reckon,
well,
before
we'll
I go out.
We'll be happy to drag
again.
You out. No, I think you better toughen up and come out in Port Phillip Bay. You'll love it.
I'd love to. 10 years since I've dived. I'm ready for that cold water. Bring it on.
You won't forget. It's like riding a bike. Get you straight into it.
And so shall we bring Sean in now?
Yes, let's share the love. We're going to open you with our wings and welcome into the fold, into our flock.
Oh, that's so poetic and beautiful, and thank you. And,
I know.
And without the without that rich marine life in the bay, it wouldn't be so good for birds. And Port Phillip Bay is, you might think, being on the shores of our second largest city, that it wouldn't be much chop for wildlife, but you've just proven wrong from under the water. But it's actually the habitats around the bay and within the bay itself, it's one of the really strong habitats for water birds in Australia. In fact, for shorebirds, which are long-legged birds that feed on the edges of, usually on the edge of the water, in the tidal flats. And
your supermodel kind of birds, long
yes.
legs, beautiful long legs and bright beaks.
I've never thought of them that way, but yes, Port Phillip Bay is probably, it's certainly in the top 10 sites in Australia for shorebirds, or it has been in the past. At one point, up until the 80s, the regular counts that people from Birds Australia and the Bird Observers Club were doing were that they were coming up with, it was about 160,000 individual birds of shorebirds on an average year.
Wow,
but
that's massive.
There's been a massive decline since the 80s in those numbers, and these days I think it's around about, they're getting on average about 35,000, which
so
is still a big, important area. But
And so why? What's the reason for that sharp decline?
It's a combination of things, and that's what the Birds Australia are trying to do at the moment with the thing called the Shorebirds 2020 project, which is using volunteer bird watchers, putting evil twitches to use for once. And
I love the name twitching.
it's got all sorts of wrong connotations, really. But all the wader fanatics are going out, or shorebirds, waders, it depends which side of the Pacific you're on what you call them. But they're going out and monitoring all the sites, the wetland sites around the bay and around Australia, but there's a particular focus on Port Phillip Bay, and they're recording the numbers of birds. There's about 35 species amongst that 35,000.
Do you, twitchers, and I should introduce Sean properly by saying that he wrote a book called The Big Twitch, which was about setting the Australian record for seeing the most number of birds in Australia in a single year.
Possibly the stupidest great achievement in Australian history.
Did you ever get pooed on?
But
constantly.
You talked about wader experts. Do you guys specialise, do you? Some people just go for wader birds while others are heading up into the
There's more hinterland. More factionalism in bird watching than you'll find in the ALP. there are people who are exclusively shorebird people, and they don't care. You could get an eagle come swoop down, a sea eagle, and pick up a sea bass in front of their eyes, and they would not look up because they were busy going through a feather by feather analysis of a juvenile plumaged grey-tailed tapir. But then there are the eagle people who, you know, they wouldn't care for anything but an eagle, and often with some of those people, they never the twain shall meet.
And you're a generalist, are you?
Yes, a twitcher is very democratic. Some would say crass, but for a twitcher, every bird counts for the same. They're all one tick in your notebook. So I do have a soft spot for a lot of twitchers are shorebird fanatics, because the shorebirds are a remarkable group of birds. We've got our indigenous ones that live in Australia all year, but of the 35 species that visit Port Phillip Bay, there's probably 20 to 25 of those that are actually migratory, and most of them actually breed in above the Arctic Circle. And these little birds that range from, I suppose the biggest ones are not much bigger than a chicken on long legs, down to sparrow-sized birds, will fly thousands and thousands of kilometres, basically following the sun. They're like the grey nomads of the bird world.
And so what type of birds are you talking about? Do you want to put some names?
Yeah, well, we get Port Phillip Bay is really important for birds like the curlew sandpiper, which is a little grey bird, although at the moment, the birds are just arriving from Siberia and Alaska, and a lot of them have still got their breeding plumage, the sort of traces of it. And the curlew sandpiper's got this beautiful brick red colour underneath in the northern hemisphere, but when it's down here, it's usually, like most of the shorebirds, it's quite drab. And so they go unnoticed. But Port Phillip Bay was one of the top six sites in Australia for that species. And Australia and Africa are where they migrate to.
And Sean, where would you suggest, if you were just wanting to go down and get a good look at some Port Phillip Bay birds, is there a great spot that you guys would recommend to maybe just an amateur?
Portsy Pub.
I know you're all amateurs as well, but, you know, to a first-timer.
To a novice. Yes, well, We're still really lucky. I was actually out, I was interviewing for Edit, the Birds Australia membership magazine called Wingspan, and I was interviewing a bird watcher who's been birding in Melbourne for 70 years. And he was telling me stories about how there was an amazing swamp just where in West Williamstown, and Altona was filled with these incredible bird-rich swamps. We're still lucky we've got a few spots left that are fantastic and internationally renowned. Like, unfortunately, most of them you need special access to get in there. But places like the Western Treatment Plant or Werribee Sewage Farm, that gets about 16,000 waders each year. So often half of Port Phillip Bay's shorebirds are in at Werribee. And you can get a permit there from Melbourne Water and visit it. And it's amazing to see these flocks of thousands and thousands of these birds that you know have just arrived from Alaska or
so they're really hungry, don't care what they eat.
Yeah, they're feeding machines. They feed day and night, and the only thing that stops them from feeding, because they lose half their body weight in the flight to get here. And apparently birds like the great knot, they've got fantastic names, the great knot actually, it increases its liver size before it migrates, and then its liver then on the flight reduces by about a third, because it's basically cannibalising its own body to get to the destination.
Goodness. Wow.
They're really incredible little critters.
We have been having a wet and wild experience in Port Phillip Bay. It's actually coming to an end because Derek Gill's quiz waits for no one. Well, doesn't wait 20 minutes for no one. It's waited a while already. But we're going to say goodbye to Cherie until she's back next time with Derek, I'm sure, in a couple of weeks.
Yes.
And Angeline Chu, you're on Radio Marinara talking ocean every week on Triple R. That's Sundays, is it?
Sundays, 9 till 10 o'clock, 10 a.m. on 102.7.
And I'm sure that listeners will see you out on the bay, both of you.
They will indeed.
The water babies out there who love to have a bit of a dip. And Sean, I might get you to stick around and be part of the quiz. Is that okay?
Oh, sure.
Excellent. You were late, so you get a bit of extra time. You're listening to Evenings. Derek Gill, he's doing Conversation Hour this week. Tony Martin is sick, so it's One Tone. Tony Wilson here on Evenings ABC. This is You Are Going to Be My Girl by Jet. Are you going to be my girl? Are you going to... Was that Iggy Pop and Lust for Life? No, it wasn't. It was Jet with Are You Going to Be My Girl. You may have heard it at the grand final last year. We've got an SMS. What's this rubbish? Turn it down. Thank you very much for that. We want you to ring through now for... Yes, it is. It's happened each night. And here it comes again. Derek's Quiz. Not done by Derek.
Want tickets to this year's AFL Grand Final? Then get on board ABC Grandstand's Grand Final Grab. For your chance to win Grand Final tickets, upload a picture of your best grab to the ABC Melbourne website. It can be a picture of a grab on or off the field. Go to abc.net.au/Melbourne and hit the competitions and events page for more information. You don't have to be this guy to enter.
Oh,
774 ABC Melbourne and Grandstand's Grand Final Grab.
Yes, the Derek Gill Evening Show quiz, not done by Derek. Sean Dooley in the studio with me, Tony Wilson. Please call on 1-300-222-774. You know the number, 1-300-222-774. Be a part of it. And for a prize tonight, Australia, folk songs and bush verse. Convict stain to shearer's blades. Sean, just verify that that would be the best thing anyone could win.
Absolutely. Next to a Jet album, it's probably the best. It looks fantastic.
Well, we're underway, and our first caller is, I think, Jenny from Warragul. The question.
Hi, Tony.
You ready for the first question, Jenny?
Yes, I am, but I wish I remembered what it was last night.
Oh, I know. The prize went off last night, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's good. It's a nice new question.
Name the two Brownlow medalists selected in the 2009 AFL All-Australian team.
Well, I wish you hadn't asked me that question.
That's no good.
I hate VFL and AFL or whatever it's called these days. Can you give me another question just to be a nice person?
I'm really sorry, Jenny.
All right.
You never know. You could get back on if you cycle through.
All right.
Andrew from Essendon.
Hi there.
Hello. Do you also hate AFL?
No, I love it. I'm crazy, actually.
Name the two Brownlow medalists selected in the 2009 All-Australian team?
I'm not 100% sure.
9 minutes.
I would be guessing Jimmy Bartel and Adam Cooney.
That's incorrect.
Damn.
We're going to go to Charles in Piercedale. Charles?
Tony, do I get any special bonus for having read one of your books?
Probably not.
No, I wouldn't have thought
if
so.
You win,
anyway.
Though, if you win legitimately, I presume it was just one of the children's books, just 350 words. Name the two Brownlow medalists selected in the 2009 AFL All-Australian team.
What a great question. Chris Judd.
Yes.
And if my brain cells are working here. And I'm an Essendon fan, you know, and I know there were no Essendon players in the team.
Not many recent Essendon Brownlow medalists. Wanganeen would be the last one, wouldn't he?
Very good. Very good.
Oh, no, James Hurd.
Oh, correct, yeah, Hurdy. second, golly gosh. Nah, look, I've only got Juddy in my head, Tony, so there you are. It's an easy play for the next person.
The number is 1-300-222-774. We're looking for the two Brownlow medalists selected in the 2009 AFL All-Australian team. We've nutted out one of them, who is Chris Judd, named as vice-captain. The captain was, of course, Nick Riewoldt.
And this could be where we start the first of the Brownlow leaks. If somebody information, say, well, the 2009 actually, Brownlow medalist
was
is
in it. As well. That's a really good point, Sean. There actually are probably three Brownlow medalists in it, but you need a time machine to answer the question properly. We have Dwayne from Albury. Have you got an answer for the second Brownlow medalist in the 2009 AFL All-Australian team?
Adam Good.
Yes. Named as a bench player. Bit unlucky. Thought he played pretty well this year. Could have been a starter. In what country would you find the Fox and Franz Ferdinand glaciers?
South America.
We're going to have to go to the next caller, and it is Gavin from Apollo Bay. Gavin?
Yeah, can't help you on that one, mate.
The Fox and Franz Ferdinand glaciers. I think there was actually a tragedy in the news last year about someone who died on the Fox Glacier. In what country would you find the Fox and Franz Ferdinand glaciers? At least until they melt in the next couple of years, the way things are going. We're speaking Sean from Bentley.
Oh, g'day, how are you?
Good.
Excellent. I've a sneaking suspicion they might be in New Zealand.
Yes.
6 minutes.
Saganaki literally means little frying pan in what language?
That's unfair because it sounds incredibly Japanese, but I'm sure I've had it at a Greek restaurant.
You going to commit?
I'm married, of course I'm going to commit. I'm going to be brave and say Japanese.
We have to go to the next caller. Adam from Barham. Geez, some hard lifting was done by Sean from Bentley. Adam, you there?
Yes, I am.
What language? Saganaki literally means little frying pan in what language?
Greek.
Yes.
Oh, brilliant.
Correct. My Greek pronunciation might leave a little to be desired. When might you need something called a tens machine?
You got me there.
Have you written these
Five
questions
minutes.
Yourself, Tony?
I have. I've filed through the recent experiences and come up with that one. We've got Helen from Glengarry.
Hello.
How are you, Helen? When might you need something called a TENS machine?
If you've had an injury and are undergoing physiotherapy or you've got continuing pain.
I'll accept that. I was probably looking specifically for labour and childbirth, but definitely it can be used for pain relief in other areas as well. Transcutaneous electrical neural stimulation. Good one. Which Canberra highway is named after Australia's first Prime Minister?
I always get this wrong, which one it was. The Barton?
Yes. Which Canberra suburb containing Old Parliament House is named after one of the original justices of the High Court?
My child's just went up there beginning of August.
That is a tough question.
I'll give you a clue. It's sort of a trick question. Not a trick question. No, that's not a good clue.
Is it Deakin?
No, I'm sorry.
Like the other one, yeah, on the other side. Bye.
Sorry, Helen. Prue from Beaumaris?
Oh, no. I've got no idea. Can you ask it again?
Which Canberra suburb containing Old Parliament House is named after one of the original justices of the High Court?
Oh.
Think of it as a his and her question with the last question.
Oh, I don't know.
Which Canberra Highway? The last question was which Canberra Highway is named after Australia's first Prime Minister, and this question is which Canberra suburb containing Old Parliament House is named after one of the original justices of the High Court?
Edmund. I don't know.
Go to Andrew in Murrumbina.
Yes. How are you?
Good. Have you got an answer?
I don't think it's correct, but I'll go with Kingston.
That's the next suburb.
No. I think. Robin from Mulwala.
Oh, don't do that. If I was home looking at the fridge, I could see it on the fridge magnet. But I'm not home, so I can't say. Sorry, guys.
The number is 1-300-222-774.
So if anyone has access to the last caller's fridge magnet, then call in.
So we're looking for the original justices of the High Court that might have lent themselves to a suburb. And I said there was a tricky his and her marry up the previous question to it. We've got Adam from Hastings. Are you there?
Hey, yeah, g'day.
Yep. Have you got the which Canberra suburb?
Oh, geez.
Containing Old Parliament House, named after one of the original justices of the High Court.
2 minutes. Oh, would it only be a guess? Have we had Deakin?
We have had Deakin. And we've got Rowan, who's in the city.
G'day.
I hope you're in the city of Canberra, Rowan. You might just drive straight past Old Parliament House and have a look at the postcode.
I grew up in Canberra, so I hope I'm right.
Yeah?
Barton.
Correct.
Yes.
A weird quirk of Australian history that the first Prime Minister was also on the original bench because the High Court didn't form
until 1903.
Until 1903.
A quirk of Australian history that the first Prime Minister was also on the original bench.
We're just getting the feedback there in the radio. Rowan, if you can turn down the radio. Who is the only one of the five Wisden cricketers of the century not to have a knighthood?
Rowan, if you can turn down the radio. Who is the only...
Are you there still, Rowan? I can hear myself back.
I was just turning it down.
Sorry. Who's the only one of the five Wisden cricketers of the century not to have a knighthood?
I'll be quick. I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Bad luck, Rowan. It was a good effort before. Anna from Apsley?
Yep.
Have you got the only one of the five Wisden cricketers of the century not to have a knighthood?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I have no idea.
Have we got Joe from Mansfield? Joe, are you there?
I am.
Do you know who the only one of the five Wisden cricketers of the century not to have a knighthood would be? Do you want to have a guess?
I don't even think I can have a guess. I was hoping you were going to pick me.
I'll give you the others are Bradman, Jack Hobbs, Viv Richards and Garfield Sobers. And there's one other cricketer who is in their five who doesn't have a knighthood.
Sorry.
Bad luck, Joe. Mark from Bendigo?
Hello, I wouldn't have a clue.
That's it. The quiz hasn't gone off, Sean Dooley. Controversial quiz. The Barton question bogged us down. I am almost apologising for that. Tomorrow night's opening question will be, who is the only one of the five Wisden cricketers of the century not to have a knighthood? And the jackpotting prize is Australia Folk Songs and Bush Verse. And there's plenty of good listening on there. Rare convict ballads and broadsides, bush rangers, bolters and other wild colonials. It really will be a great win when someone picks it up, hopefully tomorrow night. So the quiz didn't go off. We've got an SMSer coming through saying, Tony, where is Tony? He's sick. He's got a terrible throat infection tonight. So we haven't got him. But we have got Sean Dooley, author of The Big Twitch and Cooking with Baz, who's here with us for a few moments longer. We're going to throw to a promo, I think, and we'll be...
Join Alan Bro each Sunday morning from 10.
How many words do you think there are out there that have never been recorded in any sort of even informal dictionary?
We really don't have a clue.
I'm just getting a text here. Frizzering, which is a cross between freezing and shivering.
Wonderful.
Ploitering, P-L-O-I-T-E-R-I-N-G, which means you've been working all day on the computer at home without achieving anything.
Well, I wish that I weren't as familiar with that word as I think.
Alan Bro on 774 ABC Melbourne.
And on digital radio.
You're on ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria with Tony Wilson. Tony Martin, a sore throat tonight. Derek Gill, he is hosting the Conversation Hour for a week. So it's me in the chair. We've got Sean Dooley, who's sat in post his little discussion about Port Phillip Bay birds. And now it's our great pleasure to welcome Daniela Malika. to the... Is that right, or is it Mollica?
No, it's terrible. It's Mollica, but well done.
What a shame.
That's right, you fail.
Thank you for coming in. You come in regularly, I believe, to talk to Derek about slow food and farmers' markets.
I do indeed. Like to chat with some of the farmers around the state and try and help people access their produce from more local, in a more local manner.
And what's on this week in farmers' markets?
Oh, what's on? There's heaps on. The main area that we're going to be having at the moment is asparagus. Asparagus is in season, so it's time. Kiwirup produces 95% of the state's asparagus, and it's time that you get into it. It's the best spring vegetable. But tonight we're talking beef.
And it's a dark era when you see that from the USA sticker on the asparagus, isn't it?
Or from Mexico or from Peru. And it's atrocious. There's no reason why we need to be importing something that we grow so beautifully here and so close to Melbourne.
And who are we going to be talking meat with?
Tonight we're talking meat with Alan Snaith. And Alan is one of our regulars at the farmers markets. And he produces beef from Belted Galloways.
Excellent. And he'll be on after the news, I think.
Okay.
We've got a man here who knows a little bit about beef, though. Sean Dooley has written a book called Cooking with Baz, which was about... well, you can tell us what it was about. Well, beef was fairly central to it, wasn't it, Sean?
Well, one of the chapters is actually how to cook a steak. It doesn't really resolve the answer, but the story's about my father, who was a... he was a bookie, he was a bit of a larrikin, and a barbecue guy. He never really cooked himself, but then when my mum, who was a complete opposite to him, an artist and very, very refined and dignified lady, was diagnosed with cancer, and she lost her appetite because of the chemotherapy, Baz took it upon himself to cook her the perfect, irresistible meal, and he became a whiz in the kitchen, and this was just in the era before farmers markets got started, but he would have been down there like a shot and just engaging. And he became a connoisseur. He used to get the local butcher would hold a side of beef for him and hang it for an extra couple of weeks so that he had the tender, the choice meat. And after my mum died, and then when my dad got sick with lung cancer, and I'd moved home looking after him and cooking for him, I made the mistake of going down to this butcher and not ordering the special touch-the-nose beef. And instantly, when I cooked the steak for him, with his watchful eye over the steak, he's just gone, "Did you get this from Reg's?" I said, "Yes." "Did you get the special beef?" And what's the special beef? And he could tell. And
the stuff out back.
Oh, definitely.
Not the stuff out front. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, I'll let you into a little secret. I also produce beef. I've got a farm down in South Gippsland, and my husband and I also breed beef, and it does. It makes a huge difference.
Well, Daniela, we now do have your beef specialist on the line in Alan Snaith. Are you there, Alan?
I am, Tony.
Well, we lost you there for a moment. I'm very relieved to hear your voice. You're a beef producer down... You breed Belted Galloway cattle in Clonbenane, is that right?
Yeah, Clonbenane's up from you, though, Tony.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that, Alan. He's up near Kilmore.
Ah, okay.
So tell us a bit about the Belties, Alan.
Well, they're a very hardy breed. They originated in Scotland and came out to Australia in about 1959, something like that's the first recorded importation from New Zealand. Great cattle, good mothers, taste great.
They're those ones that have got like the white band around them, like a cigar ring around the
cigar
body.
Ring, yeah, they're called girdled Galloways, cream betweens, you name it. My neighbours call them Band-Aid cows. But yeah, they're fairly distinctive. Well, they're very distinctive.
They are. My husband's grandfather actually had a station up in central Australia, and he had Belted Galloways on that so that he could actually see his cattle from the air.
Yeah. Yeah, I always say that Angus people can count better than me because they have to bend down in the dark and go 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then divide. And I just go 1, 2 as they walk past.
Alan, you said that they're good mothers. Are there some cows that aren't good mothers? Is this a controversial statement in cattle rearing, or not really? Everyone knows it.
Look, yeah, it is, and it's a lot to do with the management of the cattle, of course. So, I guess I've got relatives that breed other breeds of cattle, and they tend to pull more calves, but once again, I think it's more management than anything else. But they are good. They're very good with milk. They used to be a dual. They used to be called a dual-purpose breed, which is milk and beef, and they have a very good milk supply for their calves. Their calving ease has been recorded as good. In other words, assisted births are very low, and their calf weight is very low. So our average calf weight would be 32 kilos. So they pop out like peas.
I reckon you need a tens machine for that. Yeah, what do you reckon, Tony?
I think so.
Putting a tens machine on the cow.
And you're up near Kilmore. Can you tell us how the fires affected you, Alan?
Got me.
Yeah.
I passed it though. No, the fires got. They took out all of our outside infrastructure. We saved our house, but we lost all our sheds, equipment. We lost some cattle, dogs, tractors, that sort of thing. Past that now, though, the community's been great and we're all moving on, looking for a brighter future. And one thing about fires is it forces you to update things.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, and if people want to have the opportunity to meet Alan, he's actually quite involved in the Melbourne show. So, far from being someone who sat down after the fires and said, we're not going to do anything, he's got his daughter down there looking after the cattle, and they're doing a dinner at the Melbourne show to actually, so you can eat an entire meal that consists of belted Galloways, including dessert.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right, Daniela. It's not just belted Galloways. When I call them Galloways, which covers the three types. So there's belted Galloways, solid Galloways and miniature Galloways. And what we've done is, while the breeders are in Melbourne, we've taken animals from those breeders that have come to Melbourne. We've processed them here in Melbourne and we've actually prepared the meat for the meal from those animals, and the breeders of those animals will be at the dinner and they'll stand up and... it's a bit like a farmer's market, only around a dinner. The breeder will stand up and talk about his operation and the meat that's been placed in front of the guests.
So do we have the small Galloways for entree and the big Galloways for main course?
Well, we have actually worked it a little bit that way. Yeah, we've got our rare breed chef, Alan Harding, who's, I guess as we speak, working his fingers off, because we're actually doing a luncheon for the RAS tomorrow for their sponsors and their councillors. And then on Friday the 25th,
Well, Alan, viva Le Galloways. I hope you have a great run at the show and best of luck getting back on your feet up there in Kilmore. It's been a great pleasure having you on. And also you, Daniela, thank you for coming in.
You're
and
welcome,
Tony. Sean as well.
Thank you, Tony.
Time for news.
Thank you.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
Every time I push the button here, I miss him. Tony Martin, he's meant to be pushing these buttons. I'm meant to be on the other side, but he's sick. So the roles are reversed. I'm in here by myself, but not by myself, because Daniela Mollica is here. I've got her name pronounced correctly this time.
Thank you, Tony. It was marvellous.
We missed out in that kind of run into the news there. We missed out on properly publicising the times and dates of the upcoming farmers' markets.
In fact, so this Saturday being the third Saturday of the month, if you want to do your shopping around Melbourne, come on down to Gasworks in Port Melbourne, or in regional Victoria, there's Burundara, Echuca, Piercedale, Foster or Wheelers Hill. Well, they're suburban as well, I guess. On Sunday, you can wander down to Inverloch or Seaford, Talbot or the Yarra Valley. But something else I just want to quickly mention, there's been a lot said about assisting people with fire reconstruction, and one of the most amazing ways you can do it and make sure that money gets into the hands of farmers is by coming along to things like events that are being run at the Melbourne show. And so if people are interested in coming along and eating the Galloway meat at the dinner next week, which is on Friday the 25th, they just have to send Alan an email at WBGbeef, so WBGbeef@bigpond.com, and you can come along and actually talk to a farmer. You don't need to give them handouts, but coming along and supporting those sorts of things will put money back into the communities that really require it most, the farmers.
And if you've got that passing interest in meat, why not step it up into a full night out? And I'm sure it's cheaper than some of those very deluxe all-beef restaurants that you pay a lot for. So it's probably a good way. If you are a connoisseur, be a part
of Alan's night. And come and talk to the breeders. Actually hassle them, you know? You want to know about your beef? Come and find out.
Excellent. Daniela Molica, thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
I'm sure you'll be back with Derek soon. Is it every week or every fortnight?
Every fortnight I come and hassle him.
Excellent. We'll hear from you again then. We've got Damien Callinan in the studio. He's coming in to ride the way home to Stumps with the sunset and the end of the show and all that. He is going to be a part of things. We'll be joining him shortly. But first, we had a Wainwright earlier in the show. It was Martha. This is a Rufus Wainwright song, and it's a fair bit bitterer than Martha's, but I think it's beautiful. Going to a Town. Going to a Town, Rufus Wainwright, when he played it at the Arts Centre, the stripes on the American flag were white and black. He was in a bad way, I think, with the Bush administration. But I'm sure he's feeling a lot better now. I think he will be. We've got a special guest in, a man who's going to take me through to 10 o'clock, and that is Damien Callinan. You know him from the ABC and many appearances on 774 Melbourne and ABC Victoria. Spaznuts, The Cave to the Rave, The Story of Dance, they're both shows he's done. And I believe you've just been on tour recently, Damien, as well, even this week.
I have been touring my Spaznuts about the nation and across the ditch as well in fair New Zealand. And I'm touring, you picked two good shows actually, because I'll be touring that show next year.
The dance one. Magnificent show.
While I can still pull off the moves, it's, you know, the years are ticking, so...
Well, we've got a few things that we're going to talk about. It's pretty much, it might move around a little bit. Yeah. You've got a bit of bin talk, I believe.
Yeah, we'll talk about bins.
I wanted to actually talk a little bit about rules that are made in your house. And in some ways, for convenience sake, I'll call them mum rules, but dad rules would be appropriate as well. I had a weird one the other day. We've just had a baby, Tams and myself. Harry's now 3 weeks old. And so we had all the aunts on my mum's side came around at the same time. And they came around the back out of kind of, you know, we don't want to knock on the front door in case the baby's asleep, so we'll sneak around the back. And, you know, a lovely visit. But then when we were showing them out, the baby wasn't asleep, and I tried to show them out the front door, and all aunts refused and said, we must go out the door that we
came in. So as a collective.
Because our mother taught us that you should always leave by the same door that you came in.
Just,
to me, that's quite a mad rule that I've never heard before. And so what is a family tradition looks like dying with me.
Do you reckon is that a class-based thing? Like people would have been, you know, trained to, you know, come in the servant's door or whatever, only exit the servant's door, and it's going to carry over from that?
It may have a reason. I think it's certainly with them, it's probably just emerged as a superstition. Really.
Yeah.
So what we're asking for and is looking for rules that you may have had in your household, and particularly offbeat, odd, possibly superstitious rules that your mother came up with or your grandmother. 1-300-222-774 or 1-9-774-774. Have you got one?
Well, there's a number of things have sprung to mind. The first is not actually so much a rule, it's just a quirk of our particular household. We lived next door to this woman, Jean McNamara, who used to come to Mass with us for a Sunday morning. And every Saturday night, we had to decide before, 10 o'clock, before Jean went to bed, what time Mass we were going to, because we used to put the time Mass in my sister's bedroom window so that Jean didn't have to knock on the door and ask us what time we were going or ring us. And we would just put a piece of cardboard, and my sister had to set, you know, 8:30, 10, 11:30, 5 p.m. And she just placed that in the window so Jean would know what time. Sure enough, 5 minutes before the scheduled departure, Jean would just appear with her handbag in the driveway.
Well, that's
so basically efficient. The rule was we had to decide before 10 p.m. on Saturday night what time Mass we're going to.
And was there a favourite?
11:30 was most popular, particularly as we started to kind of became teenagers.
Well, Tony Martin, I said to him, even on his sickbed, house rules, and I was actually in some ways alerted to this as well by his fantastic book, Nest of Occasionals, which is coming out this week. He has... His mother seems to be quite an odd character, and she had lots of rules. And I said, I'm only up to chapter 3. I said, how many could you rattle off? No watching the Benny Hill show as it's puerile and pornographic.
Yeah, we had that one.
No leaning back on chairs. And if you break your neck, don't expect me to call an ambulance. if you eat an apple without washing it first, you're taking your life in your own hands. No running in the house. See earlier comments, re-ambulance. Farts are not and never have been funny. Talking to yourself is the first sign of insanity. No television until you've done your homework, because knowing all the cars in racky, wacky races will not get you into university, and no slouching, because I'm not going to pay for you to have corrective spinal surgery. So
I'm surprised he doesn't have on that list, which Tony made quite famous in his earlier stand-up, and I believe on The Late Show as well, the rule which was invoked in my household, because my mum was a seamstress, not the good scissors.
Not the good scissors. A great rule,
which was a bit of a catchphrase of Tony's, but also in our house, it was not the pinking shears either.
Really?
Yeah. Do you know what pinking shears
are?
No.
What
pinking
are they?
Pinking shears. You know those? They're kind of squat. They're used for cutting out fabric for sewing with that serrated edge, so that it would come out like a jagged pattern, so rather than a straight line. So they're quite sharp, but you know, and there's actually no point trying to cut anything with them. And of course, paper just destroys the sharpness of them. So, pinking shears, not with the pinking shears.
There was a great line in Cheers, I think, when Frasier is trying to rebel against life, and he just yells out, "I'm petting a strange dog. I'm running with scissors." There are those kind of traditional, I guess, across the board rules.
Well, unfortunately, most of the rules I was the youngest, and by quite some margin. My eldest sister's about 15 years older than me. So they would have thought by the time they had to me, they had all the rules they needed. But they did find with me that they needed to create rules along the way. I think the one that I became most famous for was that I wasn't allowed to cut out anything on a cornflake packet until the cornflakes were finished.
That's a good rule.
It was a good rule, because there was one particular year in the early 1970s where cornflakes came with football cards on the back.
Wow.
Panel. So the smaller version, you got 6 cards, and a larger packet of cornflakes, you got 9. So they were literally just on it. They weren't in the packet. So I used to get home from school and eat my body weight in cornflakes trying to get through the packet. But the rule was
Ray Biffin in pure
exactly.
cardboard,
and they were really badly printed as well.
Terrible.
The Hawthorne always looked a bit purple, the brown.
Yeah.
The rule was we had to finish the packet, so I used to eat and eat, and eventually I just worked out that I was going to wait far too long. So what I used to do is eat a convincing amount of cornflakes, but then at a certain point, when there was about a third of the packet left, I'd secrete the packet out of the box and I'd take it down the backyard around the side of our garage, and there was a gap between the garage and the fence, and I'd stash the cornflakes in there. And I reckon I did that for about 8 packets. And, of course, I'd just come inside. So, "Mum, I finished the cornflakes. Can I cut them out?" "Yeah, no worries." Until Dad, of course, one day took me around the backyard and said, "I've got something to show you." So, in his own words, "I found 8 packets of cornflakes discarded." That was a quote from my 21st speech.
What are your family rules or superstitions? 1-300-222-774. We've got Dale from Central Victoria. You got any family rules or superstitions?
Yes, mate. I come from a family of... I've got 11 brothers. So plenty of boys in the family. And the one rule my father taught us was, if in doubt, chicken out. If more than one, run.
Beautiful. Very... And how is it applied, Dale?
Just about anything you do, so...
Fights in particular?
Yeah, fights, but just anything, take off or, you know, get your way out of there. Dad used to say, no good hanging around trouble, you just take off.
Christine from Elphinstone, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Have you got a family superstition?
Yeah, the family superstition, like, I grew up in England, and this is probably goes back
further than my family, but the only place I ever heard it was that you must never look at the new moon through glass.
Really?
My poor kids had to, you know, as soon as the new moon was seen, everyone had to run outside to look at it, pretend they never saw it through the kitchen window.
I'd pretend, right. So it was. So the rule was never willfully look through glass.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's fantastically wacky. Okay. We're it's perfect. Exactly.
Is the new moon literally
for?
The first sighting? The first sighting of the crescent?
Yeah. The first time you see it, that thin sliver.
Yep.
Yeah.
Have you? Can you out whack that? Christine from Elphinstone has certainly set the bar pretty high with never looking at the new moon through glass. 1-300-222-774. Our producer John says that there's a rule in his parents' house that they sometimes have the odd glass or two at lunch, and no chainsaws after lunch.
No chainsaws after lunch.
That's a very it's a very sensible rule.
It is, particularly he didn't establish where they live. Like, is that a suburban house?
Well, I'm not sure. Just I wonder how often they chainsaw. It's quite a
to even think that.
It's quite a thought. We've got we are getting calls, 1-300-222-774. Other rules. What we had no more than one on the trampoline. That's pretty basic, I guess.
We had another one that was invoked again after an incident involving me was to clear the lawn of foreign objects prior to mowing. After one day, I just kind of just turned it on. And, you know, and so that, you know, it's actually probably what's happening now. After this rain stops, the grass is going to grow about 4 metres in a couple of days once the sun comes out. And the grass just grows up around everything. And so I went out with the mower and hit the hose attachment. And this was in the days of, you know, metallic hose attachment. It would have been the length of, you know, 2 thumbs. And it fired off sideways and went through it about head high and pierced my bedroom window at about head high. And it went through like a bullet. It didn't actually even shatter the glass. It just went... So that was a rule invoked.
Well, those mowers are terrifying. In fact, Nest of Occasionals, again, Tony's book, that has one of the most spectacular mower scenes that you could ever imagine. I can only... it is frightening. Adrian from Preston, family rules?
Better you were never born than have your nails on Sunday shorn. We were not allowed to cut our finger or toenails on a Sunday.
Wow.
I have no idea
why. And it actually had a rhyme to go with it.
Yes, and a rhyme.
Do you know what the origin of the rhyme is?
No, I'm very curious. I have no idea at all. It's my grandmother would be about 100 now, as far as I know. But
it sounds a little Presbyterian to me.
It sounds a little Catholic. I'm not quite sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah, from country Newcastle. So.
Okay.
It's a good. My wife's family, they've got this thing where they throw a serviette over their left shoulder when chopping onions because they think it prevents the crying.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't seem to make any sense either,
none
does
at all.
It? And they bawl their way through it.
Yeah. Thank Imagine you. What it would have been like if they hadn't thrown it.
Exactly. So. Adrian from Preston, thank you for that.
Great one.
Francisca from Echuca.
Oh, hello.
How are you, Francisca?
Good. My grandmother and mother insist that you must never put new shoes on the table or it's very bad luck.
Well, that's an
new
odd one.
New shoes
too.
On the table?
Never. And it's even passed on to some other family members that shoes of any kind must not be put on a table, but it started certainly that no shoes that are new must be on the table.
Excellent. Francisca, that seems... Well, that's one I'm going to start applying for no reason
so.
At all.
Yeah.
Just to get shoes off the table, generally.
Generally.
Thanks for the call. 1-300-222-774. Damien Callanan sitting in with me for the hour. We're talking family superstitions and, I guess, rules. Marianne's SMSing 1-3, but I think we'll have a track first. We'll get to Marianne's text in a moment. And just have a general chat to Damien as well. But this song, This Land Is Your Land by Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings.
Oh,
Aaron Jones and the Dap Kings, This Land Is Your Land. We were the two tones, Tony Martin and Tony Wilson, but we're down to just being one tone. We lost, I think, Off-White, but we kept the beige. And that's me, Tony Wilson, hosting you through on this Thursday night. It's nearly 9:30. Damien Callinan's been good enough to join me for the last hour of evenings here on 774.
If it means anything to you, Tony, I actually... You know how you have certain names that people think you are called, but not your name? Tony is one of them.
Really?
People often think I'm Tony. Tony or Brendan.
I get Tom a lot.
Then, of course, there's the ones, you know, that sound like your name, Daniel and so on. But.
Yeah. Oh, that's my dad's had that all his life. He's a Ray, and yet everyone calls him Ian. And weirdly,
his
middle name's Ian too. So it's quite, they almost got it.
They almost got it.
Yeah.
I took Raymond as my confirmation name as a child for the reason that my initials at the time were DAC, D-A-C, and I thought I want to, and I just had an operation, like I was about like 8, and had most of my teeth taken out. And for a very short window, a period, well, before my teeth grew back, my nickname at primary school was Drac. And I used to run around the playground with my grey raincoat as a cape, you know, affecting, Bram Stoker's invention. And thought, wow, imagine if I can actually solidify my nickname by appropriating a confirmation name that matched the initials.
Right.
Of course, it should be Drac, Drac, cool, because your confirmation name goes after middle name, but such trifling matters meant little to me. So I had to then search for a saint by the name of Ray. I thought Ray was kind of a cool name. So there are two St. Raymonds. My uncle was a priest at the time, and he actually did some research for me. And I remember him sending, he was in a parish.
Can you get almost everyone up?
Pretty much. Yeah, these days, yeah.
So is there like a St. Jaden and that sort of thing nowadays?
There is a St. Barbara.
Really?
Yeah, I discovered that.
I know there's a Santa Barbara.
Well,
that's a city, isn't it, or something. But yeah, St. Barbara.
St. Barbara, Saint the patron. She's the patron saint of blonde rinse, apparently.
Well, with naming our baby, my wife was reluctant not very reluctant. I had power over the middle name this time because she had power over the middle name last time.
Mm.
And
power over the middle name.
And,
wow.
And it's gone with Harry Anthony Wilson is what it is. But she was a little bit iffy on whore because she thought of whore as a derogatory expression.
Yeah.
Whereas I just think it is the first, that's the abbreviation for Hawthorne. He has no choice who to marry for.
Okay.
Now, hopefully.
Hopefully. Wow, you're really planting some seeds.
We are. You're on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria with me, Tony Wilson, and Damien Callinan. You have just been doing a tour around fire areas.
I've done a lot of touring this year that's kind of crisscrossed the fire areas. Some of them not directly in, but people affected and communities who've lent assistance. I did Ruffy. A lot of people don't know where Ruffy is, but it's now my favourite town in Australia. It's a town, and you can finish the trifecta for me, Tony. It's so small. All it's got is a school and a hall, and what do you think the third would be?
Pub.
Pub is the general answer.
Is it called the railway?
Doesn't have a pub. The third... thing in their trifecta is a gourmet providor. We should have talked to Danielle about it before because it is the best gourmet providor I've ever seen. It's called the Ruffy Food Store. It's got a restaurant as well and an art gallery. But there's no shops in the entire town. There's no. It's the only place of commerce. I just love it. The fact that...
You can get strays, but you can't get a beer.
That's right. You can, you know, people are prepared to drive to Euroa nearly 50 k's away to get milk and bread, but they like their quince paste on hand.
That is crazy.
It's fantastic. And it's just beautiful. People come from miles to go to it.
And what was the hall like? I presume that's where
you
played.
The hall was pretty good. It was the Memorial Hall. This is the one in those towns built, you know, in the 20s to... Do you know when they built... You know that you see, like, not RSL halls, but Memorial Halls. They were actually built... It was quite canny. Local councils used to just decide to build one as a memorial to the war, but also to actually get blokes, because there was, you know, trying to find work, try and actually get returned soldiers to their areas to build the holes so that they could pair them up with local widows, et cetera.
And, right, you know, it was matchmaking.
Yeah, it was matchmaking. I was talking to this guy in Glen Rowan who was telling this story, and so the local women were encouraged to come and bring, you know, cool, refreshing lemonades to the gentlemen and just to slow down the process, keep them there a bit longer. So, so that's what Ruffrey Memorial Hall was originally made. Because there's no reason for a town that small to have a hall, really. But is
Ruffrey double F or is it
R-U-G-H? R-U-F-F-Y.
And whereabouts?
It is. If you roughly draw a straight line from Euroa to Yay, you'll come somewhere near it.
And we are going out to ABC Victoria tonight. Is there a different taste amongst rural comedy audiences compared to city folk?
I don't know if it's taste. I tend to, when I do rural areas, I usually do quite a lot of research and find out about their area. And they like that. And there's certain, they like having their world commented on, which is not unusual.
Yeah.
I would imagine a lot of alpaca jokes in Ruffy, as it turned out. It was Alpaca Awareness Week, as it turned
out.
And I started slamming at the whole concept of Alpaca Awareness Week and what it was. And I was getting huge laughs from the kind of a horseshoe, but the front few tables were, you know, their laughter was slightly different. And
They were the alpaca
breeders. and then I did a bit of a straw poll. This was an interesting thing, particularly about Central Victoria. I did a bit of a vote then, said, okay, how many sheep farmers are here? One. Cattle? None. Alpaca? Six. So there were six alpaca farmers, so they pretty much had the numbers.
Really? Is Central Victoria, is there a chance that's where we're going?
Yeah. It's all, I guess it's...
Ostriches and alpacas.
Yeah, diversification. Yeah, not hobby farmers. These people actually...
Ostriches are gone now, though, haven't they?
I don't know.
They looked like they were coming 15 years ago, but then they didn't come.
Alpacas and llamas are all over ostriches now.
Yeah.
They're everywhere. I did hear this great story about a guy who decided to get into ostrich breeding. He drove all the way up to Mildura, bought a breeding pair, and then drove all the way back. And he had them in a trailer off the back of his ute. It was a cage trailer. And he got all the way back. They cost $40,000, the breeding pair. He got them all the way back and looked in the back, and they were both headless.
Really?
Because the cage you'd put them in was, the gaps were too wide, and the ostriches kept sticking their heads out, and so eventually they copped something.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's just awful.
That's not a good start to your business. And not good for the ostriches either, frankly. But so my touring has also taken me, I did a gig in Marysville, and it looks like I'm going to be doing a tour of CFA sheds at the end of November, which will be great fun. But it was a really interesting experience doing, you know, you're going from town to town and you judge every community. Like you said, you know, there's not only subtleties between city and country, there's subtleties from town to town and the types of people. And it was at the golf club there. There's clearly few buildings left to hold gigs in. And they walked in. It was really interesting watching them come in, and they actually transformed the room themselves. They're so used to being adaptable. They actually just moved the tables and chairs and pushed a couch over here. And when these group kind of moved, ended up looking like the Last Supper, sitting directly in front of me, like a judging panel. And I kind of read them, and as I said, I do a lot of research, so I wandered around town, and you know,
where's the last?
Where's the last here? You know, and this particular gig was in June. The Marysville gig, and I just didn't quite know what way to go with it. But I kind of got the feeling they were pretty much ready for a laugh. And after a little bit of warming up, but not much, my opening salvo was, I've actually been overseas for 6 months. Shit, you've let this place go. And to their credit, they laughed for about 3 minutes, just slapping the tables, laughing, you know, just I almost had to kind of go, okay, let's keep going. And then, you know, it was really good. They just really got into it. And by the end of it, you know, I was exhorting them to enter the Tidy Town competition and saying, who's going to knock you back?
Yeah.
And it was really lovely. They just kind of really, you know, so when I was performing in Alexandra on Tuesday night at a literature festival organised by the Murrindindi Alexandra Library. And a lot of the people from Ruffy and Marysville had come along, and word had got out about, you know, what I'd said that night. And it was really interesting. I spoke to some of the organisers afterwards, and they were saying that particularly because Marysville is such a tourist hub and people have such fond memories of it, people will go back and they want people to come back, but the first time they come back, they start talking about their previous experiences, and they're going through their sort of first point of grief, if you like.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the last thing they wanted on a night like that was to be patronised. So,
yeah.
They went with it.
It is 21 minutes to 10. Damien's going to stay with us right through till the 10 o'clock news. We've got the weather coming up before that. We might go to a track. Marianne did send us a text, by the way. It's a while ago now. But Marianne said that one of the rules in her house was romping always ends in crying. Romping's a big word, isn't it? We didn't have romping in our house. Track on. We've got a track. Sneaky Sound System, Pictures. That's a Sneaky Sound System with Pictures here on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. I'm Tony Wilson and I'm sitting in the host chair in the absence of a sick Tony Martin, and the two of us were meant to be here in the absence of a over at the Conversation Hour, Derek Giel. And the man who's sitting in with me is Damien Callinan.
Who's the fill-in for the fill-in?
That's right. It's a long. It's like a Russian doll fill-in. Where you find Damien Callinan way down the back. He's tiny. Look at him.
Tiny little babushka doll with headphones on. The headphones are so big, he's fallen over.
Hey, you've just had an experience with your bin,
I believe. While I was away on tour on the weekend, I came back and I actually it was one night I was away, so I put the bin out, came back, and it actually wasn't recycling night, but someone had decided to take the recycling bin as well, which so they had to actually go and find it and steal it, but they did. And I thought, oh, I should get that replaced, thinking this should be reasonably straightforward. But no, one must, in the city of Darabin, and I'm sure it's probably the same in other cities now, one must get a statutory declaration signed if one is to have their bin replaced.
Because otherwise you'd get lots of bins,
that's
wouldn't you?
That's right.
You'd get five or six or eight.
I'd make some kind of, you know, enclave of...
Although, why are people
bins stealing
them anyway?
I think it started with laziness. Maybe, do you know what it is? It's because you've got to get a statutory deck signed.
So you need to steal someone else's.
I'm just going to go wait till recycling night and go and flog someone's, and then they'll go through the same problem. It must stop. It must stop, City of Darabin. You're the first council, I'm sure others are doing now. You need to turn around and just replace them for us. And you'll find you'll get less people ringing.
That's a good point, City of Darabin. Paul from Richmond, he has, I think maybe from Ruffy or has a Ruffy story. Are you there, Paul? Paul? No, he's gone.
Yeah.
We've got Will from Maldon, though. There's a nice town.
Hello, Maldon.
Hello, Will.
Hello, Tony. Hello, Damien.
Hello, mate.
I'm just sitting in the table of our 156-year-old house.
Wow.
Listening to you, and it's like the boys sitting around the table having a yarn. It's a great, great night, great conversation. And just a couple of quick things, one relating to superstitions. I remember one, the crossed knives. If there was washing up going on, the knives landed up on the dinner plates crossed, there was death.
Oh, really?
Yeah, serious so Irish. Good Irish.
When you say land, was it like if they were dropped on the plate and they crossed?
Or? Oh, I think, yeah, like, you know, you didn't have two knives on your... on your table, but if the washing up was going on and the plates were put at the side of the table and the knives end up crossing, that was serious trouble there. And also in the Irish Catholic tradition, green. My mother used to say, anything green, don't wear a green jumper. Don't wear green.
Even on St. Patrick's Day?
Don't know about St. Patrick's Day, but the green was a bit of a problem. But anyway, the quick story relating to the country is that when we moved out of Baronia, we moved up into Kiwa Valley and we moved into a place called Dederang.
Yeah, no Dederang.
And just out of Dederang, we lived on the side of Mount Big Ben.
Yep.
And the boys, after leaving primary school, went into Wodonga. Tech or Wodonga High. And once they got to know a few of the locals coming home on the school bus, we used to have goats, you know, goats on the side of Mount Big Ben, and it was in a strong cattle country. And after a while, as kids do, that goats weren't going to be accepted in the Kiwa Valley, so their school books and bags would be thrown out 10 miles from home. And you'd often wonder why Paul and Nick was taking ages and ages getting home from school. They'd have to get off at their stop and walk all the way back to get their school bags.
Oh, right. So the goat farmers were victimised, is that what you're saying?
Well, it was a sort of a victimisation.
Sort of? They chucked their bags out. Yeah, they made a walk 10 kilometres.
They chucked their bags out of school miles from home.
Yeah.
And I think they end up learning how to be able to defend for themselves and one thing and another. But it was all, I suppose, a bit in their character and the way they grew up, because from there they ended up getting involved in mountaineering and skiing and travelled the world and done various things. But, yeah, it was a bit of hard knocks, I suppose.
Make them hard in the Kiwa Valley, don't they?
They do. I can relate to quite a few yarns relating to cricket and football in the Kiwa Valley and Talangata.
Yeah, well, I'm up there in late November, actually, at Mount Beauty Cricket Club.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic.
Fortunately, they haven't merged with Deterang. The footy club have, Mount Deterang, Mount Beauty, or whatever you like to call it.
But. And there was a strong Anglican-Catholic relationship relating to the football club and the cricket club all around that area and various things that went on, but it was an amazing piece of country. And, come from the city sort of as greenhorns, and, boy, you don't... you blend in beautifully, you know. The people accepted you, but it took a long time before you were part of the scenery, you know, serious part of the scenery. But, I think it was with my two boys, which are now 40-something, fantastic era in the way they grew up in doing things and getting out there. There was no TV. We just used to pipe our water from Coldwater Creek and generate our own electricity with a single-cylinder McDonnell diesel, which I knew I had to go down there in the middle of winter and wind the damn thing over and over and over to get a bit of light up so they could do their homework.
Wow.
But it's all good fun.
It
wasn't all that long ago either.
No, that is good character building stuff.
Talking to you both.
All right, good on you, mate.
Thank you, Will. Do you know that character building stuff?
Yeah.
My mum, when she took us to a particular fast food restaurant, we were only allowed to go if we were going to the municipal library. It was kind of like, your burgers with, you can get your burgers with literary merit, basically. Here, go and borrow 10 books and you can have some fries.
That's a carob chocolate
And not only that, she used to bring her own vegetables, like tomatoes cut up and lettuce and that sort of thing. So she'd buy the base burger that they produce. No. And her name's Margaret. And so she would build what she called a Big Mag.
Oh, no.
That's character building.
It is character. My mum was the same in a different way, in that she used to... I'd want clothes that I saw in shop windows, and she was like, okay. But we'd go inside, and because she was a sewer, she'd look at the thing and she'd pull it off the rack and turn it inside out and memorise how to make it.
Yeah.
And then go home and make it for me, and she'd make it just different enough.
For you to hate it.
For me to hate it. It'd be something subtle, and it was definitely not intentional. It'd be just like it'd be a body shirt, but the collar would be rounded. It'd be a pair of jeans, but, you know, she'd put an iron-on transfer at a certain point that just made it look... She may as well have written... you put a transfer that said, my mum made this, but she never did that. But.
Well, a woman who sounds like she has a lot of character is Cat Power. Sometimes she, I think, cowers under pianos and refuses to play at her own gigs. That sometimes happens. But before we get to the weather, which is coming up shortly, we do have a Cat Power track. And I love this one. It's called Lived in Bars. Lived in Bars. I think Damien Cullinan just telling me that her name is Chan Marshall. Chan Marshall. And that's from an album called The Greatest. Very confusingly The Greatest, because it's not a greatest hits. It's a normal LP.
And on your iPod, it sits amongst all the albums that are called The Greatest.
Exactly. Yeah. It's quite annoying. Well done, Chan, who has done some annoying things in her career, but her voice is never it. And her voice is very unannoying. But she is quite an odd little... Bean.
I think the cover that she does on her covers record, which is called The Greatest Covers of All Time, I'm not sure what it's called, but she does a great cover of Satisfaction, but without the chorus.
Yeah.
which is delightful.
We are ready now to go up to the Weather Bureau, where we spoke to Dean Stewart last night, and he talked rain up, and then, lo and behold, you were right, Dean, it fell. Did it fall where it was meant to?
Oh, look, I think a lot of places would be reasonably happy with the quantities they got. A lot of places did, we suggested there'll be many places that receive 5 millimetres, and most places in the state did receive that. In fact, some areas received a reasonable amount more than that. In fact, the highest totals in the state have been over the last few hours over the northeast ranges. We've had some totals as high as 40, 45 millimetres at Mount Buffalo, Falls Creek, Mount Hotham, yes.
Not good for the snow, though.
No, that's right. In fact, it's been above zero. It's still around 3-4 degrees up on the Alps, so it will have washed away some more of the snow up there, so it is getting a bit depleted up there. Now, the areas that probably missed out are through parts of Gippsland, particularly East Gippsland. Falls were generally less than 5 millimetres, and I think Mallacoota's yet to register anything in their gauge out there. And also parts of along the Murray, even though Mildura ended up with 5 millimetres, Swan Hill only had a couple of millimetres. I think Yarrawonga only had 3 or 4 as well. So there were a few holes in the rain, but other parts of the state, I'm just looking at some figures up to 9 a.m. this morning. There was as much as 20 millimetres at Warracknabeel, 18 at Stawell, 19 down at Dartmoor in Western Victoria, and 21 at Ararat. So there's some quite useful falls there. And since 9 a.m. I mentioned those falls on the Alps, but up to the northwest of Melbourne at Rockbank, 33 millimetres. Even around the Melbourne area, falls of 10 to 20 millimetres quite common, up as high as 30 millimetres in the Dandenong ranges. And also around Shepparton, I think they ended up with around 19 millimetres as well. So some useful falls, certainly welcomed by a lot of the people. Now, the rain system is, or the front that's produced the rain, is over far eastern Victoria. It will clear out in the early hours tomorrow morning. So still a bit of rain to start the day in far eastern parts of Victoria. But the high pressure system's coming in from the west fairly quickly. So by the afternoon, it'll be completely out of the state. And with the high coming over, light winds, mostly sunny skies by the afternoon as well. And temperatures pretty close to average for this time of year. So getting around the high teens over southern Victoria and just into the low 20s across most of northern Victoria. Another frontal system, a weaker system, will move across the state on Saturday. Isolated shower and the chance of some thunderstorms, mainly over southern and mountain Victoria, maybe just a sprinkle up north as well, but we're not expecting too much with that front as it goes through. And then largely clearing up Sunday, still just some isolated showers left over the southwest, but basically fine elsewhere. However, it does look like there'll be another rain-producing system coming our way on Monday. A low will come from the Bight towards us, and it's likely to produce areas of rain and some thunderstorm activity as that comes. The actual low will move just to our southeast, but nevertheless, the cloud associated with it will move across Victoria on Monday. So that's some good news that there'll be some follow-up rain. And possibly 10 to 20 millimetres, although it's a bit early, just depending on the exact location of the low, so we'll keep an eye on that one. Now, briefly for Melbourne over the coming days, I think we're likely to see, there's still a little bit of shower activity over parts of eastern, outer eastern and southeastern Melbourne. That'll clear by the morning, and any cloud that's left will be clear by about 9 o'clock, so a sunny day coming up. Light winds, some weak sea breezes coming off the bay in the afternoon, a temperature range of 8 to 20 degrees, so very pleasant conditions tomorrow. It should be fine, of course, for the football tomorrow night, but with that change coming through on Saturday, one or two showers developing, there is a chance for the Saturday night that there could be a sprinkle. A top of 21 degrees on Saturday, back to fine weather, partly cloudy on Sunday, 20 degrees, and then some rain coming in late in the day on Monday, a top of 21 before that moves in.
Thank you, Dean. Dean Stewart, Senior Forecaster on duty at the Weather Bureau. It's been my pleasure to be here for evenings on 774 ABC Melbourne. Thank you to Damien for coming along.
Thanks for
having me, Damien Cullinan. We'll be back on Monday, the two tones, Tony Martin and Tony Wilson. And over the weekend, enjoy your football. See ya.